It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Here we go. So that was fast.
Well, for us.
Very fast.
It's been a whole week for them.
Don't hit me in the face with a bike.
I don't even have a bike.
Yes, you do. It's right there. Your name is Doodle. As usual, when we do more than one episode, we have to watch a video in between because it takes a few minutes for the thing to finish compressing or whatever the crap it does. And so, yeah, that's what that's from. Haha. So welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that knows that bike wins against machete every time. And also knows if you buy 15 completos, it's only $15. But if you buy 16 completos, it's only $16. But
completos.
I should probably put a link to the video in there.
But
it's
going to
be a week before I actually post it.
That's right. You'll forget probably.
All right. Anyway, remember, it was episode 3. That was the important thing.
Okay.
Magic Talking Podcast, completos. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 108.
And we're not live. We're never live. We're less live than usual. This was a week ago for y'all. For those of you who just started listening now, this is a part 2 episode. We left the last one on a cliffhanger, so go back. No. This is a podcast where you guys write into the magical hat, which is a hat with an email. So write email to the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. The hat digests these things, figures them out, does a little bit of magic. That'd be the magic part. The magic. spits them out. The questions, the comments, the topics that you give to us, or rather to it,
to the hat, right,
into itself, mm-hmm, and we draw them out at random, and we talk about them until we're bored. But sometimes we talk about our own shit, so you just have to live with that,
I guess.
To know us is to love us.
Nobody's been complaining about that, because two times ago we talked about that, how it's been a,
nobody
a
who
trend.
Listens has been complaining. I get lots of complaints from people who don't listen.
Okay.
They're not about the podcast, though. I'm sorry, was that what you
yes,
were...
Yes, that's what I meant.
Oh, sorry. No, not at all.
Okay.
I get a lot of complaints from people.
All right.
About things. Lot of complaints. Did you know I sometimes talk too much? Apparently, it's a thing.
And people actually tell you?
Yeah.
See, I go through fits where I talk too much, but I don't think people tell me. They just avoid me.
Have I not told you?
No, you've never told me.
You talk too much.
Okay.
All right. There we go. Well, I think that about wraps it up.
Yep.
Yep. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. So how do you think your week will be?
Oh, I don't know.
Why are we not here tonight? I'll tell you why we're not here tonight. And you don't... It's not why you think. I lied to you.
Well, I thought you said you were going to a performance.
I know, and I am the night after... Oh. But I'm doing something else that night.
Oh, what are you doing?
My work is having an awards thing.
Oh, are you winning anything?
No idea. Oh. Nobody.
Oh.
Are you?
She's getting one. The producer's getting two,
wait,
she says.
We know this? When did we learn this? What? The nominations didn't stop, or the votes didn't stop till the 27th. Wow. Okay, apparently the producer's getting two of them. Am I getting one?
Well, you were invited, so yeah.
I thought everybody's invited.
No,
Okay, everybody I talked to got an invitation.
I would not be surprised. I believe the entire test development department is getting an award.
Wow. So this is the first year they're doing this.
Oh, this is
particular
awesome.
Set of awards.
And everybody gets one. How nice.
We get participation trophies at my workplace. That's the important thing. But the important producer's getting two, so that's got to be something.
You know, when I was in sixth grade.
When you laugh, you need to pull away from the mic because it goes really crazy. You don't laugh very often, but.
Okay, whatever.
When you laugh hysterically, like you do.
When I was in sixth grade, we had awards, and there were enough awards for everybody, and everybody could only get one. I was voted the funniest person. In sixth grade. But I think that's only because nobody else wanted it, first of all.
And
because
they didn't mean funny, haha.
Well, I don't know what they meant. I thought it was great. I loved it. It was really the only thing I wanted to win, was funniest person. But then I come home. Now, when I was in sixth grade, actually from the time I was, well, I mean, for as long as I can remember, I think even in kindergarten, if someone asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I said I wanted to be a doctor. And that was true clear up until I was... You know,
and
like
they thought that was hilarious.
No, that was true. That was true clear up until I was a sophomore or whatever, because I've told the story. I went to Manchester, Kentucky, and I followed a doctor around, and I changed my mind about being a doctor. But when I was in sixth grade, I still wanted to be a doctor. It was a big deal. And I came home, and I told my dad, hey, Dad, I was voted funniest person in sixth grade. And he said, well, what other awards were there? And I told him, and some of them were, you know, the smartest person and the nicest person and all that stuff. And he said, so you want to be a doctor. When you grow up, you could have been the most likely to succeed and the smartest and all those other things. But what you got was the funniest person, and you're happy about that.
Wow.
And I thought about that, and I said, yeah, I am. I'm happy about that. He said, okay.
Wow, your dad was kind of an asshole.
Well,
but it's still not as bad as what I was going to say, which is that my sixth grade teacher gave me an award specifically designed to mock a secret that had been told to him by someone about me, that I had chased him down into a back room and with tears in my eyes begged him not to tell anyone about.
What? He what? He gave you an award specifically designed to...
To mock me for this.
To mock you chasing you and...
No, he learned something.
Okay, he learned something.
Very personal.
Right.
To me, about me.
How did he...
I was terribly embarrassed because a friend who I had confided in told him.
Okay.
Sitting around thinking it was
And you
hilarious.
Begged him not to tell anybody
and
else.
He said he acted like he was going to, and so I chased him down to one of the back rooms, and I said, please don't. And I was crying.
Okay.
And he said, okay. And then he gave me an award... That essentially made fun of that thing. It was in a weird, passive-aggressive, non-specific way.
Made fun of the thing you didn't want him to reveal, or made fun of you chasing him down?
Made fun of the thing I did not want him to reveal.
Wow. That's really awful.
He was a terrible, terrible teacher in a lot of ways. And that was his first year as a full-time teacher. And a couple years afterwards, he stopped. He eventually became the sheriff in our county, I believe. And became head of the sheriff's department, and then sometime after that actually had to quit in disgrace. But that's another story. But yeah, one of the great childhood traumas that haunts me to this day, which is why I'm not giving the details out. It did involve stupid things I did in sixth grade when I had crushes on girls, but that's as far as I'll go with
it. You know,
that.
Something else that happened to me when I was in sixth grade, In like the week or so running up to Valentine's Day, someone was leaving notes on my desk. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, I don't know. I almost want to say love notes. But that seems weird to call them that. But
yeah.
I guess that's what they were. And there was some artwork on the outside that didn't mean anything until you put all the notes together and it made a message.
Oh. Did you ever find out who it was?
Yes. Oh, and they smelled nice, too. There was perfume sprayed on them.
Was it a student, or did it turn out to be like a teacher or a librarian or something?
No, because
I had a secret admirer that I think I don't know. It turned out, in school, I had a secret admirer that turned out to be some grown-up. I can't remember if it was a relative or a teacher or someone else who worked at the school. But
a grown-up?
Yeah, but nothing was romantic or anything, but it was just someone thinks you're awesome from a secret admirer. I see. And it was special for me. I don't remember why they thought I was particularly cool.
These letters
That's how much I don't remember. It was so disappointing to find out my secret admirer was just some platonic grown-up.
Well, and that's what it was, a secret admirer thing. And I think the letters were kind of poetic or little poems or whatever. Very elaborate, very cool.
And you did eventually find out who it was.
Yeah, I wish I'd kept them because if I were to show them to anyone, I don't think anyone would have guessed that a sixth grader made them.
I don't believe it right now.
Because they were very sophisticated. And they were, this young girl was really, for her intelligence and everything else, was way out of my league. But for some reason, she liked me.
And she grew up to be Casey Anthony.
No. She did all this stuff for me, and it was a total waste because I was just a stupid six-year-old kid.
But so was she.
And I didn't reciprocate her feelings, so.
Yeah, that's because you're you. Most sixth graders I know, if someone of their preferred gender romantically went to that kind of effort, they would totally believe that they reciprocated their feelings, at least for a couple days.
No. See, when I was in fourth grade, there was this girl that I totally fell for, and I don't know why it happened, but, I mean, you know, I was in fourth grade. What?
Dude, my first girlfriend was in preschool.
Oh, well, I mean, I had...
Dated her for 2 years.
No, I had girlfriends in preschool.
My next girlfriend was in second grade.
I had girlfriends in preschool and kindergarten and pretty much every grade, but this was different. This wasn't just, oh, this is what you do. I'm a boy, you're a girl, you're my girlfriend, whatever. This was different. I mean, I to this day, I can only describe it as I was in love with this woman. And to the extent that when it was clear that she wasn't interested in me at all, I would actually, if I found out who she was interested in, I would tell them and I would try to get them together because I wanted her to be happy. That kind of thing. I mean, this is how I felt about
her. God, you're such a wimp.
No, I mean, it's true. And so... Even then, this girl in sixth grade who sent me these notes, she wanted to be my girlfriend in fourth grade and fifth grade and sixth grade, clear at the end of elementary school. And I was in love with this other girl.
I fell for girls all the time, my whole childhood and adolescence, and developed these really serious grudges and really kind of creepy in a way. And had the internet been around when I was younger, I would have grown up to be one of those really creepy internet guys. Like, luckily, I did not have the technology to be as bad as some are now, but I would seriously develop these just ridiculous crushes, and it would change from moment to moment, and sometimes I would develop multiple ones at the same time, all that jazz.
Well, she left sometime in junior high, and, I mean, I, of course, had relationships after that, and had feelings that I would describe as being in love with somebody, but... not like, you know, like with her, like I said, I wasn't interested in anybody else at all. It didn't matter who they were. I didn't care. It was just her. And afterwards, it wasn't quite like that. You know, I'd be interested in, because my philosophy of dating was you date lots of people to sort of get, you know, not commit, don't get into it.
You were kind of a slut.
No, you don't go steady. You go on dates, have a good time, you know, and then... Go on a date with somebody else.
You were kind of a slut.
No. I don't mean that kind of dating. No, I wouldn't even kiss a girl on the first date.
In Meltzer, Dallas, they called William the municipal bicycle.
No.
Because everybody had had a ride. Stop it.
I just thought that when you're in high school, especially since...
I know it's an old joke, but using it on you just makes it feel new.
You know, the odds that you were going to marry anyone you're dating in high school was really slim and everything. So just don't even do that. Just go to, you know, go out with groups of people and get to know people and get an idea of what you're interested in and then maybe date seriously when you're in college, that kind of thing. That was my idea. That's not what I ended up happening, but that's what I was going to do. And that was kind of my philosophy at that time. But
and then you met me and everything changed. Let's move on to the hat.
Yeah, I suppose we should.
Bam. And what I'm doing the day after the award ceremony, I will talk about next week. Because then I will have actually experienced it, and it'll be awesome.
Dear vocal extensions of the Magical Talking Hat.
That'd be us.
What do you remember about your wedding and wedding prep from guess who?
Beth.
Beth. And she says, P.S. listeners answer too.
So listeners answer like you already mostly did.
Well, we've kind of talked about this already, really.
We super talked about this already recently. What was I just saying? Again today, actually, at lunch, the producer and I reiterated how grateful we were that we had no alcohol at our wedding.
Yeah.
How that just proved to be a brilliant idea.
Well, I'll just remind everybody that my wedding wasn't any... I mean, we've grabbed a couple people we knew to be witnesses, and we got married in a church and then went to work right afterwards.
And my wedding was way more awesome.
And yours was way more awesome.
I had a great wedding.
We've talked about all of it. I don't know... I mean, there's nothing really special to remember about my wedding or preparing for it, because there was no preparation, and the wedding was like 5 minutes. So.
Yeah, and we've discussed prep and stuff. Beth, I hate to do it to you, but also you didn't mention this question is abridged.
Yes, it is abridged.
We hate to do this to you, but we really did kind of cover this a lot recently. So we're going to stick with the same stuff. Keep the ceremony short. As little alcohol as possible is probably a good idea. Make it fun for you and for everyone. That is the big thing. It should not be a chore. And determine a photo list beforehand and organize it in ways that can get people away from the photos as soon as they can.
Maybe assign a person to help.
Yes, having a person, if the photographer doesn't have one,
yeah,
to be photographer's assistant to wrangle everybody is a good idea.
And form follows function. Put it together according to what you really want to accomplish.
And the producer's creeping in here, so I think she has something to add.
What is the question again?
The question is, what do you remember about your wedding and wedding prep? And this is from Beth, who, by the way, is going to get married sometime in the near future.
Okay, I thought the way you guys were talking, she was asking for advice.
She did that back...
Well, no, she asked what his most memorable wedding experiences or whatever. But it ended up us talking a lot about weddings and wedding prep.
Well, she did ask for advice last time.
Did she? Well, we gave it. I know that.
The show was called Wedding Crashers, and it was only a few episodes ago.
Yeah, yeah. So
check
that out.
Anyone can find it.
Yeah.
But do you have something to add?
Well, I was just going to say that when we were getting ready to have our wedding, can you
now
hear
me? I don't know that we can or not.
Probably.
Okay, you may have to re...
When we were getting ready for our wedding...
Remember, I had you write down three words...
She had me write down three words...
...that you were hoping that after our wedding, people would, if they were describing our wedding, that they would use those
words. Oh, that's a good idea.
Yes.
And then
yeah.
I did the same thing.
Three words that I was hoping that after the wedding, if people were going to describe, like three adjectives... what words that they would be, and then we tried to pattern based off of that. I do not remember what my words were at all.
I don't really remember either, but it helped us decide what was important.
Yeah, it helped you focus.
Right, right.
I mostly remember blue skies, green grass, cool breezes, twiglet at the wedding.
No.
We had a mantra, an affirmation that was blue skies, green grass, cool breezes. In the hopes that that would be what the weather was like. I, for a very long time, wanted my relatively new, 2 years old, kitten to be the ring bearer at the wedding. His name is Twiglet. Trish vetoed this right away. I thought this was a brilliant idea, so I kept trying to sneak it in to the affirmation. So I'd say, blue skies, green grass, cool breezes, Twiglet at the wedding. And then she would yell at me every time. It was pretty awesome. It's the basis of our marriage.
I suppose we can move on to the next question.
I think so. Sorry, Beth. I hate when we do that, but, you know, this one, if it had been longer ago, I might have, but it's really been pretty recently.
Mm.
And people can barely stand to hear us talk as is. Here, from our international bureau of the inside of a hat, from Craig, who is, let's just say, originally from Scotland. Which do you prefer, Christmas or New Year's? I know both of our answers.
You do?
Yes.
Why, what's mine?
You prefer Christmas.
And what's yours?
New Year's doesn't mean anything to you. And I prefer Christmas.
Does New Year's mean anything to you?
Every year I think it means something. Every year I adjust slightly. I feel like it should be important. I feel like it should be a very memorable night. I feel like a lot of television and movies over the years have convinced me that it's a big deal. And every year I'm terribly disappointed.
What makes you think it means nothing to me?
Because I know you.
Have I said as much?
I don't believe so. I do believe this year you said you didn't actually stay up.
I don't remember.
Am I wrong?
No, I'm pretty sure I did stay up, but... Are you wrong about it?
Not really meaning anything?
It doesn't really mean anything to me. Yeah. No. I mean, no.
Not compared to Christmas, surely.
Don't call me Shirley.
I wasn't talking to you.
Shirley.
Yeah, what the hell?
She doesn't say anything.
Dude, I addressed her specifically.
I know. I feel so bad just completely ignoring her existence.
Also,
boy,
Samuel
awful.
L. Jackson in the corner is doing the sign language for the hearing impaired.
Thanks, Sam, for that. I can call you Sam. No, sorry, Mr. Jackson. Yeah, gosh.
If you're nasty.
That
was like 12 terrible jokes just running all the fuck over each other. That was just a giant minefield of pathetic half-formed bits.
You know, to be honest, New Year's and Christmas really kind of blend together for me. It's like... It's like
he starts drinking on the 23rd.
No.
Wake up till the 5th.
It's like I use New Year's really as an excuse to sort of believe it's Christmas again. The 26th, the 27th, the 28th. I really extend it out. Just in my private mind, it's like, oh, I don't want Christmas to be over, so I won't let it be over until New Year's. And now people keep giving me reasons to extend it even further. Like, oh, well, you know, the 12 days of Christmas, that goes to December 6th. Really? Okay. Well, Christmas until December 6th. So
you mean January 6th?
Or January, sorry, January 6th. So I'm always finding an excuse to make the Christmas feeling last a little longer. And sometimes I'll even play some Christmas music long after, well, you know, not long, but like, you know, in the 12 days of Christmas, I'll still be listening to Christmas music.
You're like
music.
Ray Liotta on Just Shoot Me.
I just, I don't know. Christmas is not my favorite holiday or anything. It's not the time of the year I look forward to more than anything else. But
that would be Arbor Day.
No, I like Halloween. Halloween's my favorite holiday. But I do associate a lot of fond memories with Christmas and when I was growing up, and I really like to think about that and remember it. And so I like to kind of keep the feeling around for as long as I can. But it's not just Christmas; it's the whole thing from. You know, actually, it goes clear back to August and the fair, but, you know, at Halloween and then Thanksgiving and Christmas, that whole thing is just I have got so many fond memories from my childhood that sort of flood back, and I just love to be in that space for as long as I can, and so I kind of let it go into January. And, of course, my birthday's in February, so sometimes I can even cheat and go clear in the middle of February.
I love that because my birthday's in January, so it all kind of trails over. Yeah, I think it's mostly, I mean, I do like Christmas, but I think it mostly comes from the real terrible, evil bitch of a relationship I have with New Year's Eve. It's weird. I get things in my head about what it should be, and it never is.
See, I've never, New Year's is just New Year's, that's it. You stay up till 12 o'clock.
Sometimes it's a very big deal, and there have been years where I'm convinced that it is a very significant thing, the passing from one year to another.
Well,
there have been years
where I
have been convinced that it is a night of great potential romance. There have been years when I've convinced it is an excuse for intense debauchery.
Wait. Where does all this come from?
Always, movies, TV. Seriously, New Year's parties in movies and stuff, always really interesting. They're never boring.
But it's fiction. It's not real.
The stuff seeps into your head.
I mean, for me, New Year's has always been, significant. It's changing of the year and all that stuff. And that's important. And you reflect on the year
but
that's
passed.
But it's
still pretty weirdly arbitrary anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good point to market to begin with. I do that more at Halloween or at Yule.
Yeah, as do I.
Of course, that's the pagan bullshit. But,
as do I. But so, yeah, it doesn't, you know, for a long time, my new year really started in November. And then, you know, the winter solstice, okay, if that's when everyone else was kind of celebrating it. And January 1st was just kind of, I mean, you know, really the year is starting after the darkest night of the year or whatever. And so that the actual day of New Year's Day, I don't know, it, like you said, it doesn't really mean anything to me.
And I would get lots of wrapped up in that there was some sort of OCD thing, there was some significance of what was happening right at the stroke of midnight to me, like was very reflective of what the next year was going to be and all that.
Really?
Oh, yeah, no, I've had so that's much just, shit wrapped
man,
up in
man, that's really odd. In that. Because it's just a, like I say, I think it is good for people to once in a while take stock and you know, once a year is as good a time as any to think about the 12 months that went ahead before and what you accomplished and what you didn't accomplish and what you want to accomplish in the future. But other than that, there's really nothing extraordinary about it.
I think I could handle that, except it's also tied up into some serious partying that a lot of people do on New Year's Eve.
Which I've never done.
Which is quite opposite to that, and which I have, and so the combination just makes it crazy.
I guess.
And that's why I have mostly given up, and I mostly am out of that sort of weird mental state now. And like the last couple New Year's, got together with friends, watched terrible movies, and drank a lot, and had a fun time. And that was it. And really didn't hold much significance with it being New Year's. I mean, we switched the channel over when it was New Year's and said, Happy New Year, and toasted. But that was about it. And so it's becoming easier, and then it's just kind of a fun night. And we none of us have work the next day always, because it's New Year's Day. But yeah, no, there's just been a lot of weird shit over the years.
Huh.
And Christmas is awesome, so, you know, fuck New Year's.
Christmas is awesome.
And there we go. All right, next.
But Halloween's still my favorite. I love Halloween.
My favorite is still Tax Day.
Okay, Blood Sparrow.
Blood Sparrow.
Hello, Hat Minions.
Hi.
If the magical talking hat gets hand cramps from writing down questions...
It has been known to happen.
Why doesn't the hat print out the emails? So, let me kind of paraphrase what I think she's asking here is, couldn't there be a way for the hat, I mean, obviously, you know, they're on 3x5 cards, but maybe there's a
they're
way.
They're on half a 3x5 card.
Yeah, maybe there's a way to, for the hat, since it's magical and you can do a lot of cool things, to sort of magically transport the questions to a properly formatted, I don't know, some kind of text document, whether it's Word or something else, that when printed out, but then I think the hat would also then have to cut them out, which would be a whole other step.
The hat would have to, yeah, create some sort of template that cut it, that separated it into approximately similar sized squares.
Yeah.
Deal with the formatting of different kinds of emails, possibly adjust the font size depending on particular email in question, whether or not it would fit, and then would have to print that out and then cut that out, possibly put it on a stronger backing to make it more sturdy to go inside of itself.
Well, unless it was printed on cardstock or something.
Possibly, if the hat had access to a printer with cardstock readily available on a regular basis. And really, the hat doesn't want to do that much work.
Well, and not just that, but the question is suggesting that, I mean, the only reason the hat gets a hand cramp is if the question is really long.
Yes.
Printing it out doesn't solve the problem if the hat prefers to have everything on the same sized little card.
Unless there's a change in font to make it really,
really tiny.
Exactly,
right.
Yes. And over the years, the hat does not have as great eyesight as the hat used to have. So really, it's more work for the hat to do what you describe. And the hat can sometimes be lazy.
Well, maybe the point's being missed, though, that the hat wants
that
to...
That it's a hat.
No.
Certainly not one of us.
That
it's a hat that's doing this.
But the hat wants magically to put them on cards that are roughly the same size.
So that we can draw at random and not differentiate.
Right. So we can't be having little cards and then huge pieces of paper or stapled together something or other. No, they all have to be these little cards, and that's the real problem. It's not...
Yes.
So...
And let me reiterate, this is a magical hat doing all this, not a person.
But the thing is, you do often talk about the hat getting a hand cramp, which makes it sound like the longer questions could all be on the card conceivably if the cramp didn't happen. But the fact of the matter is, it's the card that's limiting it, not really the hand cramping.
Generally speaking.
The hand cramping thing's really just a joke.
Usually. There are times.
Especially since the hat doesn't have a hand to cramp.
There are times when the hat says, technically, if the hat says to itself, technically, if I, the hat, wrote really tiny on these cards, I could fit this question. But it's a really meandering and long-winded question, so I think it would just be easier to get to the point.
Yeah. And
sometimes the hat says that to itself.
With the whole hat cramping and printing and all this, we're speaking metaphorically, of course.
Yes.
And
because it's not one of us.
No, and it being a magical hat, you'd think it could do whatever the heck it wants to do. But
no.
But well, and it can do whatever the heck it wants to do.
The hat is not God.
Well, it can do a lot of things. If I suppose if it wanted to, it could give us larger cards or pieces of paper or whatever. But it obviously wants the cards to be small.
Yes.
And it wants us to be able to read the cards easily. So its print is going to be only so small, and the cards are only so big. So it's just going to have to be a brief question or digested. That's all
and
there is to
it. And let's bear in note that your question was of decent length, and yet somehow it fit on the card. So the hat can do its shit sometimes. Anyway, that's all the hat has to say on the subject. Again, not us. The hat.
Next. Thanks, Blood Sparrow, for that question.
So much. This one is from Sir Guido. Dear Hatlets, is there anything better on a cold autumn evening than a bowl of rich, creamy soup? Yes. $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. $1 million. Oh.
Or $1 million and a bowl of rich green soup.
For free. Like you didn't have to spend any of the $1 million.
No, separate. Yeah.
Yeah, you're
plus,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Very
good.
If you get two bowls of rich creamy soup, it only costs $2 million.
Mm.
Wait, I'm really mixing things up.
I like rich creamy soup. Nice ginger ale on a cool autumn day.
Presumably cold ginger ale.
No, I don't drink any beverage chilled, you know. I always drink them.
Or heated?
Well, I'll have hot chocolate or
but
hot
most
tea.
Of your what would be considered cold beverages are done at room temperature.
Yes.
Really? I am big on cold drinks.
And there's something about ginger ale on a not like a frigid cold day like in January, but on an autumn day, because you know a ginger ale with real ginger in it kind of has a warming effect, you know.
It does burns a bit.
Burns a little when it goes down. It's kind of nice.
Oh my God, I have to tell. So
or
the other
warm
night,
apple cider, that would be good.
That is always good.
Cool autumn day.
The other night we were having dinner with the neighbors, as we do every Sunday.
Okay.
That's a tradition we have. And the producer had made a crisp that she does sometimes.
Hmm.
And this particular crisp was the filling, like underneath the crisp, was a pie filling that she had canned a while ago that was a nectarine ginger pie filling.
Hmm.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Has a good bit of ginger. She's a big fan of ginger. The neighbors kind of like ginger. I kind of like ginger. Had that in there. We weren't sure the little ones would be into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, there were some things we eat and we're like, the little ones will freak out. We won't give them this, or this will be really spicy to them, or whatever. But this we just weren't sure, so we'd give it to him and see what happens. Gave it to him, and the four-year-old tasted it and said that she did not like it because it made her tears come.
Huh. Interesting.
Because of the ginger, I think. But we just found that the most delightful phrasing for a four-year-old. I don't like it because it makes my tears come.
Mm. She likes them to stay away. Apparently, yes.
Go away, tears. Do not come. And yeah, we're trying to incorporate that into daily life now. Movie was so sad it made the tears come.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know if any of these things are better than rich creamy
soup. Let's talk about soup. I like soup.
Yeah, soup.
Do
is
you
good.
Remember? I like you, soup I know too. You've had this
soup
long time
sandwich
ago.
Sandwich is nice.
The producer makes a roasted butternut squash, a blended soup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Amazing. I have a weird intensity with this soup. There are very few foods like this. I will literally, take my finger, the pot is empty, and I'll scrape it all out into the thing, and then I will, go with my finger through it. I love that soup so much. It is a sort of, it is a roasted butternut squash. I know there's cream in it. I want to say there's curry spices in it, because we frequently do it with a little bit of cilantro, a little bit of sour cream. It's so good, and it's blended smooth. Just amazing, amazing stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good harvest time sort of soup there.
Right, right.
I grew up thinking I did not like soups. In fact, and when I started dating the producer, I told her I did not particularly like soups.
Huh.
I have since learned the error of my ways. I'm quite fond of soups. I believe it is one of those things where I associated soups with a couple of particular kinds that we had regularly at home. And I was not a fan of those.
Sure, sure.
I think that's what did it.
I've always liked soups and sandwiches and sauces. And
I'm quite a big fan of soups now.
Just in general. Always, places that
basically things that start with S, you're saying. You like foods
exactly.
that start with S.
Salads.
And you eat soap.
No, not
eat
soap.
A lot of soap.
Like
saltines.
Panera Bread, you know. I mean, that's...
Panera is a wonderful
You go there
place.
And you can have... These really creative, wonderful soups with a nice sandwich, and sometimes a sandwich has a creative sauce on it.
Yes,
it all starts with the letter S, but that's not the point. The point is
have
it's all
had,
good.
And have you had their mac and cheese?
No.
They have a Vermont cheddar mac and cheese. It's like shells and cheese, really, but it's very tasty. Mm-hmm. And you can get it with the pick two. It's very nice.
I've
discovered, actually, the pick two at Panera with the mac and cheese, the chicken and wild rice soup, the creamy one, the real thick one. Oh, you probably
don't
have that.
I'm not
going
to eat that.
You've probably seen it, though. and chips for the
and
side.
And it looked delicious.
Chips for the side. All of that is just right for my carbs.
Oh. Well, that's cool.
It's what I've been getting a lot when we go there. No. Love Panera.
It's
except
a pretty
that it's
healthy
very
place
popular
to eat.
And crowded.
Yeah, yeah.
And very. So it makes it very noisy, kind of annoying. And that's the sole
have
thing.
Have to wait in line a long time.
If that were not true, if it was more quiet, if it was less busy, if it was less crowded, if there was less waiting in line... Would probably eat there at least once a week. Love that place.
Yeah, it's a good place.
Which means we should get more stuff to go from there. We don't do that very often. We do sometimes, but we really should. All right. Well, we're booking it tonight.
Yeah.
We've already done four.
I don't know.
Yeah, four.
Really?
Yeah. And we're not even at 40 minutes yet.
Good.
So.
You know, I like it when we draw a lot.
I know you do.
Haven't been doing that. Ugh. Dear TMTH, how can apartment dwellers successfully reduce their carbon footprint? Beth wants to know.
Oh, Beth. They can get married, okay? Get married, move in with the guy. Then you will have a smaller carbon footprint because you won't be heating two homes. You won't be washing two sets of linens, things like this.
Well, there are a lot of ways to reduce your carbon footprint.
I just said that because she's getting married.
I know. There are a lot of ways you can reduce your
your fargon poop print.
Well, I don't even know what was going to come out there.
Fargon poop print.
Yeah, that's probably what I was going to say.
And ladies and gentlemen, the title of the episode, fargon poop print.
Carbon footprint.
I like mine better.
Yeah, a lot of ways you can do that you know, no matter where you're living.
I got to write that down. It's going to be a week before we get it. I'll put a note in here.
For one thing, if you live in an apartment, you can make sure you don't live by yourself. The more people that live in an apartment, the better it is in terms of that whole carbon thing.
Am I spelling it right, do you think?
Probably.
All right, good.
Also, you can eat less meat.
That reduces carbon footprint.
Yes. You can...
Explain that one to me. I think I kind of get it, but explain it to
me.
Well,
because, you know, research has shown that, or has demonstrated that meat production is more carbon intensive than vegetable production or grain production.
But less carbon intensive than diamond production.
Okay, anyway. Less meat.
Come on, think about it.
You can also make sure that you buy most of your food locally. And, of course, I've always advocated that for a lot of reasons. Because the shorter distance your food has to travel to get to you, the less fuel is used, you know, and so on. Let's see. Of course, you know, recycling as much as you can. A lot of people think that that helps. Not sure about that one. You can bike to work rather than drive a car. Even a hybrid vehicle burns carbon
and is terrible
based fuel.
Dream. I was on a podcast.
You can purchase a car.
Oh my God, it's real!
That doesn't use fuel. I mean, you know, electric car. Let's see. What else can you do?
Buy an apartment made from recycled materials.
You can, you know, a lot of the things you purchase, you can just be very careful about.
I hate you, Beth.
You can use, make sure if you're not in a room, you shut the lights off. You know, don't leave lights on everywhere. But there's some debate about the light bulb thing. You can get low wattage bulbs, you know, but some people are complaining about those because
they got the scary shit inside of them.
Yeah, they've got mercury and whatnot inside them, so that might be a little weird. But you can always use less electricity, just be more careful with the electricity you use.
Oh my God.
Let's see, what else can you do?
If you listen very carefully, you can hear the sound of us losing listeners.
What else?
There goes one.
There's a lot of things you can do.
William knows them all.
Well, I don't know them all, but the point is, if you just sort of sit down and you think of everything that you do that, you know, uses energy, and including everything you buy and the energy that goes into making that thing, you know, even your clothes, if you don't mind going to someplace like Ragstock or Goodwill to buy secondhand clothes, nice secondhand clothes.
Or go around naked.
You know, that's cool, too. It's
cheaper.
You know, try running your air conditioner or heater, depending on what time of year it is, a little less. Like if it's during cold months, you know, wear a sweater or something instead of running your heater as much. It's just, you know, stuff like that. Most people, if they just sit down and think about everything they do or buy that uses energy, just try to come up with an alternative and you can reduce your carbon footprint, even though you live in an apartment that might be constructed out of, you know, materials that have a horrible footprint or maybe you can't completely control the insulation or whatever, so you know you're losing a lot of energy through cracks in the windows and stuff. Although there are some things that you can do to an apartment, landlords will even let you do to sort of weatherproof it, and you might want to find out what those things are. But, you know, he's literally reading a book right now while I'm talking.
I remember a game we used to
this
play.
This is a question that was asked
at school. A conceptual game which consisted of endless variations of the same question. If it was a choice between doing X or dying, which would you do? X might be buggering a dog, killing your mom, or pissing in the communal wine, or listening to William discuss reduction of carbon footprint. It says that right in here.
Here's another thing you can do.
See?
There are actually websites you can go to that'll sort of quiz you, like ask you questions, and depending on how you answer them, they'll give you an idea of what your carbon footprint is. Just by taking the test, you can get an idea of what kind of things you can do. But after the test is done, they'll actually give you suggestions. They'll tell you what things you are doing to make your carbon footprint too big and how you can reduce it.
We won't put those in the show notes.
Do you have anything to add to this?
Oh, no. This is right in your wheelhouse.
Well, not really. It's just something I...
Oh, yeah, it is. This is just that kind of shit you get off on.
I don't know. It's stuff that I think is important, but I don't think I'm as... I don't think I'm as what do I want to say? I mean, I don't know the word I want to use here. I don't think I'm as obsessive or crazy about it as a lot of people are.
Is that just people that live in your house?
No, like, maybe relative to you, this is a...
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of people...
What I'm saying is, get a haircut, you damn hippie.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
This was a question that was asked.
Absolutely, and I am sure the advice you gave was incredibly useful to her. I just attempted to inject a little levity for the people who, like me, were literally dying of boredom. And I'm using that word correctly. Honestly, I felt my heart rate slow and skip a couple beats. And, you know, bits of me were falling off. I was dying of boredom. Also, when that didn't work, I thought I should just keep out of it to let you do your thing, because I had nothing useful to add, except for my, I still think, very important tip of buying an apartment made up from recycled materials.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
Too bad you didn't have any Halloween candy to sort through while I was talking.
Oh, I have diabetes. What's wrong with you? This one is from Hard Hat Number One, Mark McKibben, and it has been abridged. Dear Vocal Extensions of the Magical Talking Hat, do you ever mentally add to a billboard? As an example.
Okay, good.
Here.
Because I was at a loss as to what
the example appears to have been a billboard that says, love God, love people. And he has mentally added, love Soylent Green.
Well, that's a good one.
That is a good one.
I don't know if we could even top that.
I question billboards a great deal. I question them. I ponder their message and what they are really saying.
I think I mostly ignore them, so I don't know if I add to them or not.
One that always sticks with me, and we're going to get a little controversial here, people. I may have mentioned this one before. I'm not going to get into the debate of my actual position on the subject of abortion. But here's what I'm going to say. There is a homemade billboard near where my in-laws live that says, and I quote, God is pro-life. Are you? And I find this the most ridiculous billboard ever, because God is super not pro-life. Because you know what God abortions are called? Miscarriages. You know what else they're called? Just death. God has killed so many babies. Come on. If God really thought that was the worst thing, it would never happen. It's God.
Well, in most, I've seen similar homemade billboards. Actually, the one I've seen just says God is pro-life.
But it's really not.
Well, okay, even if you could make the argument that that's true.
And I'm not saying, in no way am I including my own belief.
No, right.
I'm saying,
I get it.
That concept, the theory that God is pro-life, taking pro-life to mean for or against aborting a child,
yeah,
or aborting a fetus, or yeah, whatever, yeah, right, you want to say. I don't think so. I don't think that argument holds.
It holds any empirical scrutiny.
No, but even if you use as evidence actual scripture, even if you take a specific God in mind, which I assume they do,
yes,
the God of the King James version of the Bible.
But I would also say that whatever methods they use to try to prove this scripturally or theologically or whatever, you could use similar methods to demonstrate that God is pro-choice. especially if you're talking about if you're a Christian, you know, and there's plenty of texts in the New Testament that suggest that, you know, following God or, you know, believing in God or living a righteous life, these are things that you choose, and people should be allowed to choose it. So, you know, but probably the biggest thing that bothers me about any type of billboard like that is making a billboard where you're stating what God thinks or what God would say or whatever. And even if you think you have some Bible verse to back you up, unless you're quoting the Bible and your personal belief is that God speaks directly through the Bible, if you're just making a statement, your own statement, and saying this is what God thinks, I just find that to be incredibly arrogant. I mean, the height of arrogance.
God is pro county sales tax. Are you?
To me, it means exactly. I mean, it's every bit as meaningful as what you just, as far as I'm concerned, to say God is pro-life or pro-choice or whatever. You know, when the Bible does not specifically address, of course, does not specifically address abortion anywhere, as far as I know, and you know, there's no Bible verse you can use and just throw out there and let people interpret it as they will. And maybe the most obvious interpretation is what, you know, what it looks like on the surface. But no, you are going to decide that you know what God thinks and you're going
to
put it on a
billboard. Well, to be fair, there is an actual situation in which this would be appropriate.
What do you mean?
If God told you. If you talked to God.
No, I suppose
God
that's...
God was like, you
yes,
know what?
Yes, 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 I'm suppose pro-life. That's right.
And here's the thing. At that point, even if the evidence is really fairly stacked against it, that concept, you're not going to be rude about it. If God says he's pro-life, then you got to take him at his word.
But wouldn't you put a billboard up that says, God is pro-life, he told me?
Or oh my God, that's what you should be mentally adding to those billboards. Mark, if you drive by one that says God is pro-life, you got to mentally add, he told me.
He told me that.
He told me.
I just mostly ignore billboards anyway.
I went to my neighbor Larry. I said, Larry, I've been talking to the Lord. Larry said, oh really? I said, yeah, Lord, Larry. He walked off laughing. You walked off laughing. You know, I'm the only guy in my neighborhood with an ark.
Now, do you pay attention? I mean,
I pay a lot of attention to billboards.
You do? Do you ever add anything to them like that? Or
I don't think so. I mean, I mock them a great deal, and this is a great way to mock them, but I don't know that I actually do that.
I guess I've seen some billboards I've mocked, but I don't remember them off the top of my head. Like, there used to be a billboard for a truck stop between here and Davenport.
The world's it was the world's largest truck stop, and then it became the biggest truck stop in Iowa because something happened, and now it's the world's largest truck stop again.
Well,
for a little while, they had to make it a little... They had to get specific somehow.
Well, I think at first it was the world's largest is still there. The world's largest I-80 truck stop. And then I think
they
said...
That's right. They had
to
switch it down.
The world's largest Iowa 80 truck stop. I was like, it's the largest truck stop in Iowa in the whole world.
I think they finally switched back.
I think they are claiming that on the entire Interstate 80 from New Jersey to San Francisco, this is the biggest truck stop on it, which I'm sure isn't true.
Oh, I just assumed they became the second biggest because something happened in Dubai.
No. It's all about being on Interstate 80, but
I will say,
it was specific about Iowa 80, like the biggest truck stop in the Iowa section of Interstate 80, I think is what they were trying to say. But they said the world's largest, so it seemed ridiculous.
Here's a variant I do, usually with the radio, sometimes with the television. When an advertisement starts off with a great deal of rhetorical questions, like, do you really want to have another drink before you go home? You know, if it's a PSA, or have you ever thought about how much more you could be earning if you got your degree? Or I always answer, well, not always, but when I'm playing this little game, I answer out loud the exact opposite answer they're expecting.
Sure, right.
I do that quite a bit. Do you really think another pair of shoes will increase your popularity? Yes, I do. Well, come to our seminar. No, I want the shoes. I had just one of those today. It was a commercial for Rosetta Stone language software. The most amazing commercials.
Oh, yeah.
And this one was about spending money basically on more material stuff or something that mattered, like learning a new language. And so it was things like, you know, will a new gadget really enrich your life? You know, would a new pair of shoes make you feel better? And every time I was like, yep, definitely. Never know. I think so. I do that a lot. And I also used to get confused because there was one for some company that would some school where you could earn your degree, and it said, "Do you ever stop and think about how much more money you're making if you only had your degree?" And for a long time, I was like, "If I only had my degree, as opposed to the master's or doctorate I have now." I was like, do you ever think how much more money you'd making if you'd stopped before grad school? For the longest time, I didn't understand that. And then I was finally like, oh, if only I had my degree.
Talking to people who didn't have their degree, obviously.
Yeah.
That's the part you were missing.
Not talking to PhDs saying, you wasted time.
Yeah.
Dr. Scholl makes foot pads.
Wasn't it Sally Struthers?
He's a doctor, so he went to school for a long time. But you don't need to go to school to learn that walking on a cushion is more comfortable. I would have bought that from a Mr. Scholl.
Wasn't it Sally Struthers that did those? Do you want to make more money? Sure, we all do.
She did eventually. First, she wanted you to feed all the children.
Oh, yeah.
But then eventually, she did the... And you could... I remember that. And you could major in all sorts of things, but it was just like a training course. You got certified or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can earn your degree. And there were always two options. And one was accounting. I forget what the other one was.
Like criminology or something?
Or earn your degree. No, that came later. No, they were two really generic. It was accounting.
Nursing or...
That's too fancy for this.
Too fancy.
And like accounting or like finger painting or I don't even remember. That was just had two to start with. Well, years later, we got the hospitality and industry. That was a big one for a while. All of those.
I guess the answer to Mark's question is
no. We don't do that. It's just you, and it's weird, and it creeps us out.
It's funny. I mean, I think that's
like
very
the
funny.
Idea.
And
I will probably do it now.
Not
right now, but...
When I do pay attention to billboards, just as Tony was saying, I do mock them. And maybe, in a way, I mock them in the way you're talking about, adding at the
end. I don't mock them when they're really straightforward and factual.
Really
if they're like, you know, Super 8 Motel, 2 miles down, turn right.
Yeah,
that one I get. Yeah, I'm like, you're letting us know. That is useful information if I'm driving and need a motel. If it's, you know, ones that PSAs or other things are just weird slogans or...
Do we get those very much around here? Because, you know, I always see news items about these controversial billboards all over the place.
No, we don't
hardly
really
ever
get the
see
real
around
weird
here.
Ones around here.
Like even the ones that were supposed to be from God, you know, oh, little quotes and then God at the end of it.
We get some from like the Better Life Society or something, which I think is a front for either the Mormons or Scientology.
No,
I don't remember.
But... I don't. It seems like the only billboards I see are like what you were saying. But hotel, 2 miles, it's like nothing really to mock about that. The ones that are...
No, it's 2.4 miles, asshole.
The truck stop one, it was funny because it seemed to be making a claim that didn't make any sense. But that's it. I mean, not very many interesting or mock-worthy billboards on my drive to Des Moines when I go home.
We'll work on it.
Yeah. We'll have to work on that one.
Yeah. So, there's a street in Coralville.
There's lots of streets in Coralville.
Yes. Most people know it as Mormon Track. This particular bit is now also known as Hayden Fry Avenue, which annoys the shit out of me. Actually, it was First Avenue. Now it's Hayden Fry Avenue. I apologize. Still annoys the shit out of me. Anyway, along there used to be a Motel 6.
They'll keep the light on for
you. A little further down, there was a Super 8.
Yes.
The Motel 6 is not a Motel 6 anymore. Do you know what it is?
A Motel 12?
No. It is, I am not kidding, a Super 7.
Huh.
I don't think that's a thing.
Well, it is now.
I think that might be the only one. And it tickles me no end that it's a Super 7. Because before it was a Motel 6 and a Super 8. These are different, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, it's literally Super 7 or Super 8. I'm going for Super 8, clearly. It's bigger.
Right, but...
If it was a different adjective, I'd be like, well, you know, we're weighing apples and oranges here. But now, with Super 7, Super 8. Go for the 8. Why would you mess around with Super 7?
Well, explain to me again why you would go with... It's bigger?
Bigger, yes. More.
But maybe you pay more for that extra one. Maybe the Super 7's cheaper, but you don't really sacrifice that much in quality.
Maybe I should just keep living in my house. I do live in this town, so...
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Also, Super 7, 7's an odd number.
Why, yes, it is.
Somehow that seems better. Maybe they pick 7.
I find that a terribly weak argument. However, the fact that 7 is a prime number,
I was going to say.
I find much better. In numerology, I believe 8 is a better one, actually.
Really?
It has to do with business, finance, riches, wealth, materials, stuff like that.
What about 7?
I don't remember what 7 is numerologically.
Well, God rested on the 7th day, so it's relaxing. The 8th day, you're kind of starting over. The 8th day is like Monday. Well, it's Sunday, really, but...
It's not, though.
It is, though. That if the 7th day is Saturday... Then the 8th day.
It's not. The 7th day is Sunday.
No.
Wow.
No, you're wrong. The 7th day is Saturday.
What's the first day?
Sunday. Sunday's the first day of the week.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
No.
Look at any calendar. Look at your calendar on your computer.
I understand that, but no.
But it is.
No.
So, yeah. I don't know. That's tough. See, to me, just because it's a larger number, that doesn't automatically make it better.
Of course not. Actually, I've stayed in a Super 8, and they're much nicer, generally speaking, than a Motel 6.
But Motel 6 keeps the light on for you.
Yeah, I don't know that Tom Baudette actually stays there.
Well, what?
I don't know that he does.
Well, no, he doesn't stay there. He, like, is the guy that keeps the light on for you.
No, Tom Baudette does not work at a Motel 6.
He works... What?
For the company.
Now, wait, back up.
We don't have time.
He's the one who says he's going to leave the light on for you.
We. He says we.
Like he and everybody else there.
No. Guys, we have a lot of shit we have to deal with now.
I cannot believe.
We'll talk to you next week. So. No, it's on behalf of them, he's stating...
Well, that's cheap.
Yeah, that's pretty much their game.
You know what? I think you're lying. I don't believe you.
All right. Talk to us next week, folks. We'll leave the podcast on for you.
And we mean it. See? You're telling the truth.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat... at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.